The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, listeners, followers, new folks jumping on. This is We the People Radio. You are listening to Elizabeth and our guest today, Ruth Angel, Bob Martin, who handles all the engineering and the music. He is so awesome. Hey, so if this is your first time tuning in, we are about fiscal responsibility, limited government, and let me say limited, not no government, as our naysayers like to point out, and adherence to the Constitution. So there's a lot of things that fit under that umbrella, and today we're going to jump in with our guest in a few minutes here and talk about Agenda 21. And if you don't know what that is, you're about to find out. So anyway, this morning we're going to talk about Agenda 21. If you are not familiar with what Agenda 21 is, that is the agenda for the 21st century, which was presented in 1992 at a world summit in Rio de Janeiro. And that basically is a world plan for sustainable communities throughout the world, something that was presented to the United Nations. Our particular government never, our Congress did not vote that in. They did not ratify Agenda 21. However, through presidential executive orders and the use of NGOs, which are non-governmental organizations, that become the barrier between the public and the government agencies, they have managed to implement a lot of the facets of Agenda 21, not only nationwide, but statewide, and very much global. In your local communities.
Yeah, global. I just, you know, it's funny coming from the Bay Area, where all of the paradigm for this global expansion, it's in place. The infrastructure's in place,
yes,
and it
is.
Just blows me away. When I first heard about Agenda 21, I go, well, that's already happening in the Bay Area, and I actually am just totally blown away by it, because when I was living in the Bay Area, it seemed like a great idea. It seemed like transportation to get to work, because I'd be hours in traffic.
Yeah, and they count on that. They can't, and they know how to use positive sounding words and descriptions to get your buy-in. So our guest today, and before we take a break, I'm going to introduce our guest, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about what's happening in Northern California, and more specifically in Siskiyou County with water issues and how this ties in to Agenda 21. So our guest today is Michael Shaw. He's been on our show before. He's a leading critic of sustainable development, also known as the UN's Agenda 21, where he is an action plan, which is the action plan implementing the globalist One World Vision. This year, Michael has been and will be speaking around the country, delivering his current speech, The Ultimate War, Globalism versus America. In this expose, he illustrates the local infiltration of globalist policy in the community in which he is speaking. Shaw leads freedomadvocates.org, which is dedicated to providing news and information on what America stands for and how Agenda 21 is designed to transform America and the human experience. So, Michael, thanks for holding on. I really appreciate it. Good morning.
Well, it's great to be here with you, and I've got to say that 400 miles south, it's the same weather pattern here along the Central Coast. You know, it rained yesterday and most of the night, and this morning is just gorgeous. California is a wonderful place.
and in addition to all of the wonderful benefits that you can get in California, we do have awesome weather.
Well, I think that's what drew most of us.
Yeah.
California.
Isn't it due to global warming, though?
Every day and don't leave, notwithstanding the existence of an ineffective and crazy government.
So, Michael, when you and I talked yesterday, we chatted a little bit about what we want to cover in our show today, and we will be taking our first break in about 3 minutes or so. So why don't you touch very lightly on what we're going to lay out in the next couple hours?
Well, I'm going to give a general overview of Agenda 21 for those who are not very familiar with it, and for those that are, there's always, you know, new angles that people can see when they pay attention to it. And then I'm going to talk about some federal conditions that make the implementation of Agenda 21 quite easy. These are constitutional breaches that are that our federal government has committed for most of a century, and they're having big effects today. So I want to talk about how some of these constitutional violations really pave the way for Agenda 21. And then finally, what I want to talk about is the present position of the Department of Interior with respect to the dams in Siskiyou County, and talk particularly about two recent whistleblowers who have popped up inside the Department of Interior and who have really blown the cover for Secretary Salazar's plan to basically shut down and make Siskiyou wildlands. That means a place essentially devoid of people other than Aboriginal people in Native Indians. And this is the issue that has to have people in Northern California concerned. There are lots of places around the country that are feeling tons of heat, but I frankly don't know of any place that's under more pressure today, more sudden pressure, to vacate the county than Siskiyou, because breaking down those dams can well have that effect.
And isn't it true that if these policies are successfully implemented in Siskiyou County, that they will then continue to move south and across the country? Isn't Siskiyou County, you know, the poster child for this plan?
Well, I'm not sure I could say it is the poster child. The Adirondacks in upper New York State have been under massive pressure for years. It's been pretty evident, but the effort in Siskiyou is kind of a new one. It's normally through the slow evolution of rules and regulations that drive people off their property. You can look nationally, and you'll discover that there are 20% fewer ranchers today than there was in 1992 when Agenda 21 was unleashed from the UN. And the reason why there are 20% fewer ranchers across the country today is that every place is under pressure. Now, there's no question that the notion of breaking down 20th century improvements that about which a community is built is a circumstance that's not paralleled anywhere. To break down these dams, flood the basin, make the land unproductive, and if you've got unproductive land in a place like Siskiyou, you've got no reason for anybody being there. The towns are predicated upon the activities that are dealing with the land resource issues. And if those resource issues are denied access or destroyed through flooding, there's no reason for even the remaining towns. And that's the objective of Agenda 21, is to move everyone into smart growth, stack 'em and pack 'em communities. And
we call them rabbit hutches.
Yes, I heard you call them rabbit huts, and I think that begins to describe it. I mean, the Bay Area is not through their Agenda 21 program. They're rolling out a massive shifting of how the Bay Area operates in what's called the One Bay Area Plan, which
we're
is another national trendsetter for the implementation of Agenda 21. And this One Bay Area Plan calls for $250 billion to come from the federal government to completely revolutionize the infrastructure for the Bay Area, and really to turn the 101 cities in the Bay Area into one coordinated, sustainable community, where the major thoroughfares are off limits to individual cars. And you're supposed to live where you work.
Yeah. I heard they just got approval for Caltrain to expand and electrify and modernize, and their intent is to hook up to the Central Valley for the speed train.
Well, the speed train is another huge boondoggle. I saw in today's paper, you know, they've now reduced the cost of doing the speed train from San Francisco to Orange County by $30 billion.
Of course they did, because taxpayers aren't going to go for that, but then they'll be having to put bonds together and to pay for the rest of it.
Well, you know, the fiscal circumstance is all part of this Agenda 21 takedown. You know, how long will the dollar last until there's absolute dismay and havoc in this country resultant from the destruction of the efficient working of a currency. And it seems to me that boondoggles like the speed rail and the Sustainable Communities actions and the One Bay Area plan that calls for $250 billion of federal money, you know, begins to make it pretty obvious that the U.S. dollar is on its natural path for fiat currencies to implode. And that's one of the messages that comes from the federal government. I mean, when Congress broke the constitutional limitations that covered monetary systems and gave over our monetary system to globalist bankers, we were set on this pace at that point for world government and for control through the ultimate collapse, because all fiat monetary systems do collapse, and that ultimate collapse just delivers more power to the creators of a funny money system. So we're in a dangerous spot in all of human history, and the way out of this dangerous spot is to know what we're up against and to begin to take action against it. And that's where the call for the residents of Siskiyou gets heralded, because you are on the front line right now. And I think that from what I'm aware of, it seems that citizen response in Northern California has been
huge. Hey, and on that note, let's take a quick break, Michael. And when we come back, paint us a picture of what it would look like in Siskiyou County if the dams were actually taken out. And if you're just joining us, jump on to WeThePeopleRadio.us. We're streaming and chatting live. Or give us a call at 530-605-4567. We'll be right back.
Michael Shaw of Freedom Advocates, and we're talking about Agenda 21 and its impact on Northern California, more specifically Siskiyou County. Hey, Michael, we kind of took a long segment there, so our next break will be coming up fairly quickly here. Tell us a little bit about Agenda 21 specifically related to the dam removal. What is it going to look like if they pull those dams out?
Well, I think it's important for somebody's mental framework to have the picture of what Agenda 21's intentions are, because then it's much easier to identify the effects of the dam busting. But jumping to that bottom line, the effect of the dam busting, as I understand it, and I'm not a scientist, but as I understand it, when the dams bust, you've got a big basin up there, and when the dams break, and the water goes as it will flow over relatively flat land, you find that there's water everywhere. Water everywhere, and nowhere is there water that is drinkable or water for irrigation available to you, because the hydrologic system will have been destroyed. And so what you will be doing is putting Siskiyou County, the effort, the intent anyway, is to put Siskiyou County into a 15th century condition. And, it is the natural condition of Siskiyou County is not a place where human productive activity can take place, because, you basically have a swamp with warm water, and most of the areas don't have much flow. It's like the coastal spots here in Santa Cruz used to be, that you couldn't go from hill to hill as they head out toward the ocean, because in between these little hills were swamps. And until those swamps were drained, the coastal lands here couldn't be used. So it would be as though all of our low-setting valleys had to become swamps again. And the houses sitting in those valleys simply, no longer work, because they're in swampland. And, that will be the condition for much of Siskiyou County. And you say, well, why would anybody want to turn productive land into swampland? Spend $1 billion to break the dams in order to destroy things? who would want to do such a thing?
And why? It just doesn't make sense to me that they would take infrastructure that's already there and just do away with it.
Well, that's why you got to start at the beginning and understand what Agenda 21 is. Because when you understand Agenda 21, the plan makes perfect sense. I mean, sense from hell, but at least then there's some understanding of why they're trying to do this, and it begins to give some insight on what kind of people are running our country.
So maybe that's where we need to go. Maybe we need to go back and explain exactly what Agenda 21 is and who started it.
Okay, well, Agenda 21 was unleashed on the world in 1992 at the Rio Earth Summit. At the UN conference, there were 178 nations that signed agreement to implement Agenda 21 over the coming decades. The U.S. had President George Bush Sr., who went to Rio, and signed on behalf of the United States to the Rio Accords, including Agenda 21, while visiting Prince Charles, who was there for the same purpose. And George Bush signed the Agenda 21 Accords on the Prince's yacht. So in 1992, George Bush brought this so-called soft law treaty back to the United States. Well, it's a soft law treaty. I mean, you didn't read about that in any school book you ever looked at. So, well, what is a soft law treaty? Well, a soft law treaty is a new design created by the United Nations, really with the U.S. in mind. A soft law treaty means you don't have to do anything, country. You just take your promise that you're going to implement Agenda 21, and you go home and you make laws to do that. But the treaty itself doesn't become a hard law. In other words, it doesn't need senatorial approval. It needs presidential authority. It's all they want. They want our presidents committed to implement Agenda 21, and then the presidents can do it through the administrative offices of the federal executive, meaning every cabinet office. So you've got the Department of Interior with its charge for the implementation of Agenda 21. And if you go to the Department of Interior working documents, or you go to the Department of Agriculture, and you want to see the commitment to Agenda 21 undertaken by the federal government, you just read their rules and regulations. The Department of Agriculture has 220 references to Agenda 21 in its rule books.
But isn't there a pushback now? I just read that the Department of Defense, the cost is way too high. And Obama said that he's not going to fund it. And so it looks like the Army has pulled out, and the Navy and the Air Force are going to follow, if I understand.
Pulled out of what?
I'm sorry?
Pulled out of what?
Pulled out of the, like, the Leeds building, their qualification, which is tied into the Agenda 21. So their silver and gold certificates for the Department of Defense buildings with the Army, Navy, and Air Force, they pulled out of that because of the cost. So there is there some pushback, or?
No. The fact that some departments might not be meeting their LEED qualifications that have the effect of doubling and tripling the cost of construction for buildings is of no surprise in a day where focus on deficit spending is so high. The Department of Defense, where it really counts, is fully committed to world government. The Department of Defense does all the dirty work that's beyond the terms of the four corners of the page of Agenda 21 when it goes about its military endeavors, which are all to the same end. That end is a world government, and what we're doing in the Middle East is steps taken to begin the procurement of world government. And so there is no doubt that where it really counts, our Department of Defense is fully committed to Agenda 21. And the fact that they're not building LEED buildings is not indicative of anything substantial to the contrary.
So one of the premises behind, the reasoning behind Agenda 21 is population control. Is that correct?
That's one of the three, if we're talking about the control of human action, that's one of the three cornerstones of Agenda 21.
What are the other two?
Well, the first is land use control. And that breaks into two parts, and this is where Siskiyou fits in. Land use control means two things. One, the development of smart growth living, which is the stacking and packing of human beings in dense so-called human settlements. And that's what the Bay Area is about to unleash on its citizens, is a full Agenda 21 program implementation for the entire 8 million people living in the San Francisco Bay Area. The second land use element of Agenda 21 is called the Wildlands Project. Now, the Wildlands Project, the maps of the Wildlands Project, incorporate over 50% of the United States land mass into the Wildlands Network. Now, the Wildlands Network is to become, through the course of the 21st century, devoid of human beings. Devoid of human beings. And not only devoid of their presence, but prohibitions, absolute prohibitions, on the extraction of any and all resources from these wildlands. That's over 50% of the United States can't extract resources. That's why we can't mine. That's why we can't timber. That's why we can't get our own oil. Because the rules regulating resource use are significantly already in effect. And it has destroyed industry after industry. It has made the United States, and this is the purpose of Agenda 21, it has made the United States fully dependent on foreign countries for our basics, for goods, for what it is we need to live. And if you go into school today, if you're in the fifth grade, you're going to hear not about the American independence and its declaration. You're going to hear about American interdependence. And the whole world needs each other. And that no nation can stand supreme or sovereign, because we're all interdependent. Well, that interdependency comes to the implementation of the Wildlands Project, because now we can't get our resources. If you're along the oceans, you're subjected to all kinds of rules and limitations today. You can't fish anymore. The resources have been grabbed by the international community, and America and its citizens are simply out of luck.
So, and on that note, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Michael Shaw a little more about Agenda 21, but we're going to take a moment to thank our advertisers. Join us, WePeopleRadio.us.
Welcome back. We're talking with Michael Shaw from FreedomAdvocates.org. I highly recommend that you go to that website. It is stacked and packed with information about everything relating to Agenda 21, sustainable communities, sustainable this, sustainable that. Great website. Follow along while we're talking with Michael this morning. Now, we've been kind of painting a picture of where Agenda 21 started, and both on a world level and a national level. And we're talking about all of the different entities that are involved in this implementation. And if you think about Siskiyou County, they've had massive amounts of pressure from both federal agencies, state agencies, environmental groups, you name it, they've all converged to pressure the folks in Siskiyou County in every aspect of what they're doing up there. So can you tell us, maybe paint a little bit of a picture of who's involved, what agencies are deeply involved in the implementation, not just government agencies, but some of the NGOs, and what that relationship is? So people will start to recognize what's happening in their own community.
Well, NGO, what an NGO is a non-governmental organization. Gee, where does such a name come from? Non-governmental organization. What a real NGO is, though, is an entity that has been accredited by the United Nations for purposes of implementing Agenda 21. Now, how many NGOs are in the United States? You know, I don't know if there's a firm estimate, but it's in the thousands, maybe as many as 10,000 NGOs. These are organizations accredited by the United Nations for purposes of implementing Agenda 21. So what kind of organizations are they? Well, you're going to see the effects of organizations like the Sierra Club in Siskiyou, because Siskiyou is under the land use pressure of Agenda 21, and so the environmental groups have a big role. And there's not an environmental group that you can mention that's not an NGO. So that's the first category of partners.
So, and they're partners, and they're accredited through the U.S. government, but also, aren't they also funded?
They're receiving grants.
Yeah, which is basically our taxpayer dollars.
Well, let's get this right. They're accredited not by the U.S. government. They're accredited by the United Nations.
Okay.
That's a big difference. That's a really
big
difference. Now, sure, a lot of these NGOs, they're also tax-exempt organizations. If you're an NGO, you don't pay income taxes. And so that's the first break they get from the federal government. And then, yes, many NGOs get straight old grant dollars dished out to them for purposes of implementing Agenda 21. But it's not just environmental groups that are members of, or that are NGOs. The National Real Estate Board is an NGO. So your brokers are working in accordance with rules that are established by an arm of the United Nations. The American Chamber of Commerce is an NGO. No real surprise there when you studied this stuff, but for the average citizen to think that their Chamber of Commerce, they might be a member of the Chamber of Commerce, but that the National Chamber of Commerce, the American Chamber of Commerce, is an NGO. Exists for the purpose of implementing world government.
So does the National Chamber of Commerce and the National Real Estate Board realize what they're doing?
Absolutely.
So they go into this knowing that they're helping implement world government.
Yes.
That's why
we're in dastardly position today.
You know, when you say that, it just throws me off a little bit. Because she's a broker. Well, I'm not a broker, but I'm a real estate agent. But I don't, there's no real plan. Nobody sets out to tell me how this area is going to look. I actually was in the Bay Area. I actually see this unfolding in the Bay Area. We talked about that while we were off break, where they're taking high-density houses, they're putting commercial businesses underneath, they're putting in the rail systems, they're expanding BART, they're getting the speed train and how to connect to the speed train. And in the Bay Area, when you sit in 2 hours worth of traffic to actually take a 30-minute drive on a Sunday, it's really difficult to not see these infrastructures and these things take place. But up here, people move up here to get away from that. And in my mind, I think this is, I kind of know exactly what they want. They want some property. They want to be able to go out their backyard and scream to the high heavens and not bother anybody. And so when you say things like that, it kind of puts me back a little bit. When I read about Agenda 21 and I was kind of looking at, I mean, they say all the right things. They want to combat poverty. They want to protect sustainability of human health conditions. And they actually are targeting those people. They're targeting women, business and industry, farmers, the unions. So they're incorporating all the right people to move this agenda forward. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that I left that behind. And it offends me that that's moving up to this area. And Siskiyou actually raised the awareness of Agenda 21, AB 32, because I don't necessarily agree with the fact that there's global warming. And I've heard enough experts to know that it doesn't exist, but what I'm trying to say is that when you say things like Chamber of Commerce and real estate, I don't see it. But
I might be wrong, and if there's a path or a way that you can help me see that that's involved, I'd love to hear it.
Well, I think that if you look at the Bay Area again, or you come to Santa Cruz, and you see how the real estate boards support the ideas of stack and pack housing, support the ideas of transit villages, support the idea of affordable, meaning tax-funded housing, you have to ask yourself, why are they doing all of these things? And the answer is because it all fits the Agenda 21 protocol. It's all part of the stack and pack. You know, I like to use this expression to explain why it is that we don't hear about Agenda 21 from mainline news sources, and also to explain what I think is the real dynamic that drives Agenda 21 in this country, and that is this. People on the left side of the political spectrum are the foot soldiers of people on the right side of the political political spectrum when it comes to the implementation of Agenda 21. So it's easy to go out and say, oh, it's the lefties who are responsible for this assault on private property. But if you look more closely, it is the right wing that is causing the formation of a new system of economics. It's the Agenda 21 world system of economics, and it's called public-private partnership. Now, 60 years ago, we called that economic fascism, and 90 years ago, we called it corporatism. Public-private partnership is the same thing as those terms. And, of course, you know, those terms reflect the reality that business and government are two heads to the same monster. And that monster is a totalitarian one. And so today, if it were not for the right wing, we would not be where we are. If the right wing was honest about the internationalization of America, they'd be telling us about Agenda 21. But there's no politician on the right. There is no politician on the left. Agenda 21 is completely bipartisan.
Yeah, they're all in on it. And that makes sense to me because in the Bay Area, I happened to be there a few months ago and listening to a radio station, because you're right, you don't hear it on the main news, but they were talking about these meetings that they're holding all throughout the Bay Area. And when you walk in, they take your picture, and they're public meetings. They're, the public is welcome. They take your photograph.
Ew.
And
kind of creepy.
It is kind of creepy because what are they going to do with the photograph?
I mean, give me some justification for that. There is none.
Exactly. And I think there is a pushback in the Bay Area for this organized agenda because people really feel like their liberties, even living in these small houses and on zero lot lines, I really feel like people don't want to be labeled or be put on a list for the government. So I think it's what, onebayarea.org, but they were actually, there is a pushback in the Bay Area for this region thinking.
Well, there's a big pushback, but the forces that are behind Agenda 21 will gather their strength. They can stack any room they want to stack with mindless supporters, and they intend to do what they intend to do with or without public buy-in. And the city managers and the city elected officials are held hostage because all your federal funding
mm-hmm.
are dependent upon your going along with it.
That's right.
And if you say we don't go along, you lose everything. So at that point, what do the citizens of a town who say we're not going to go along with this do when they pay so much of their income to the federal government every year that now it doesn't come back to your town, it goes to where people are going along, and instead mm-hmm. your town just gets its its lifeblood sucked out through taxation without any return of those dollars. And of course, I always say to city fathers in that predicament, you're better off not getting the dollars back when you're being required to put it to sustainability purposes. And at some point, communities who say no to sustainability and who have to continue to pay these federal taxes are simply going to say, citizens, we're being held up. Stop paying your federal tax. I mean, the federal government is pushing this country to the point of implosion, because there are many people in this country who simply are not going to sit back and let America become a historic relic as we move into the New World Order, which, by the way, Agenda 21 in the Biodiversity Assessment Report calls for an 85% reduction in human population.
And on that note, that's a great thought to take your next coffee break with. We're going to take a quick one. We'll come back and wrap up our first hour with Michael Shaw, freedomadvocates.org. We're back with Michael Shaw from freedomadvocates.org. We're going to take a required 5-minute break here in about 7 minutes, Michael. So in that period of time, can you talk to us a little bit about clean energy and this idea that hydro-powered dams are not renewable sources of energy and the complete lack of logic in pulling those out and what it'll do to the residents in Siskiyou County if that happens?
Well, you know, hydroelectric energy has been crucial to the development of America. You go back to the TVA 100 years ago. To think that we can strip out hydroelectric energy and just continue is ludicrous. To take out your dams is not only to take away your freedom from the water flow that would otherwise occur, but it's creating your power. So, you know, the development of these dams was the right on idea when it was done, and to take them out today serves but one purpose, and that is to get all of you people out of Siskiyou and down into a stack and pack in the Bay Area. Welcome back.
That's not happening. I can tell you that's not going to happen from the people up in Shasta County. There's no way they're going to let that happen. People love it up here.
People in Siskiyou County need to understand that you're playing very serious game here. The federal government is committed to getting you out of Siskiyou County. The whole program for the creation of the Western Wildlands is dependent upon it really happening in places like Siskiyou.
And if you look at the wildlands map, and I actually have one, most of Northern California is gone on this map.
Yeah.
Your population centers like Sacramento North are where everybody ends up. There's nothing from Sacramento North to Oregon. Yeah.
That's right.
There's no human population in these wildlands map. And for those that think that this is just kind of crazy talk, you can Google United Nations Agenda 21 and look for the Wildlands Project. And this map came from the United Nations website.
Well, there's no denial at this point that the map is being implemented. And Dr. Michael Kaufman has done a lot of work first in identifying the mapped areas, and secondly, following over these 20 years, the progress, the remarkable progress that has been made to the implementation of the Wildlands Program. And so there's just no doubt that those dams come down. That's a big victory, and it spells, the plans for dam destruction in the United States are overwhelming. Now, some have already been busted, like Condon Dam up in the state of Washington.
And I encourage people to go online and pull up Condon Dam and look at the pictures after they pulled that dam out, and you tell me that was good for the people, the environment, the fish. Any excuse they use for pulling those dams out, you look at the pictures and you tell me that was a good idea.
Well, there's only one basis for which this is a good idea, and that is to further the implementation of a deviant plan to put the world under the control of central powers. And that's what Agenda 21 at its core is really all about. And so it uses land use program and its education program. If you've got a child in the seventh grade, they're not learning about mankind's greatest achievement, which was the Declaration of Independence. They are learning about the conditions for becoming an interdependent world community member. And, you know, the entire spirit of America is being completely left behind for the generation that is being reared today. And, the consequences of that are just apparent every way. And
it just seems so third world to me that when you're talking about this, it seems like is it America's spirit? Would they let that happen?
Who let that happen?
Well, there is the thing called the dumbing down of America.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, 50% of the population doesn't pay any federal income tax. 50% of the population is now an entitlement society. I mean, they're halfway there.
Well, sure, because those entitlements go away when the dollar busts and everybody's in the city, nobody's growing anything. The wild lands are off limits, and then the rest of America are what they call these buffer zones, where only partners of government will live and operate, and food production will be in small circles surrounding the stack and pack areas. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's just not enough production of food. There's not enough delivery of water or power to support a population level that we have today. And that's all of this begins to tie together in the bigger picture over the longer term. We're not talking very long. We're talking within a generation of where it is that the young adults, a generation from now, will not understand the American experience. And a new pattern will be set, and those people who go along will rise a bit, and the people who don't will simply be left
behind. And Michael, we're going to take a 5-minute break, and I hope everybody grabs a fresh cup of coffee. The next hour is going to be a good one. Don't go away. We'll be back. You're joining Hour 2 of We the People Radio with Elizabeth, Angel, and Bob Martin. We're talking to Michael Shaw of freedomadvocates.org. Jump on to wethepeopleradio.us. Everything about our guest today is right there on our webpage. You can follow along while you listen. And our chat room is alive and well. We're streaming live, so definitely join us and give us a call if you choose, 530-605-4567. And we're talking about Agenda 21. And Michael, in our previous hour, I think we painted a pretty good picture of what Agenda 21 is and why it's in existence. And Ruth and I were talking about health. And I know that we're not going to get big into the healthcare thing, but Ruth said, well, you know, if we've got this many people and we're all in concentrated areas, you know, where is everybody going to be, and what will our young people do for work? And I said, well, you have to realize that the biggest portion of the population right now are baby boomers, the largest portion of the population, and that would tie directly into the push for nationalized health care. And I encourage everyone to go to freedomadvocates.org. There's a section on sustainable health as well as sustainable communities and living. So I think that what will happen with the population, to pare it down, will be that there will be a cutoff for health care once you've reached a certain age and the numbers don't support your productivity. What do you think of that, Michael?
Well, I think we're entering a scary period, and as the dollar begins its collapse, that gives opportunities for them to do all kinds of drastic things that would seem surreal today, but we're not talking in the distant future. We see them prepping up with things like the Health Care Act and prepping up with the issuance of executive orders that give the president dictatorial powers. All he has to do is declare that he has those powers and he has them, and then he can order all kinds of relocations, all kinds of nationalizations, and et cetera. Now, this is a recently issued executive order. People say, well, prior presidents have done the same thing. And while that's true, you know, we've been living under the Emergency War Powers Act of 1917 for 95 years now. Mm. We are in a state of emergency, says the federal government, and have been consistently since then, which is what gives the president, under this act, gives him warlike powers to make unilateral decisions. And that's another way in which sustainable development is able to advance, because we have presidents now who use this dictatorial power that they derived in 1917 and had it invigorated even further in 1933 under Roosevelt, and no president has declared that this emergency war period has been over since then. What's that, 15 presidents later? Nobody has declared our war over, and so as a consequence, we live in a non-constitutional framework where common law is no longer recognized and where one man, the president, can do most anything he wants. And we see with each president an increasing orientation to act like a dictator. I mean, George Bush certainly did, and Barack Obama is, and if George Romney is elected next, believe me, he is a master of sustainability policy, and he'll do the same. So we're in trouble looking at the national framework. You know, there's a couple of other things at the national level that we need to be aware of at the local level, and I call them the three constitutional breaches that have been undertaken by Congress over a long period of time. And the first is the ownership and or management of broad landscapes. Why is it the Department of Interior is all over Siskiyou County? Well, it's because the Wildlands Network, which violates Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution, is moving along. The Constitution says that Congress shall have the exclusive legislation in all cases over the District of Columbia, which is not to exceed 10 miles square. And the Constitution gives the federal government like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state for, and these are the only purposes the federal government can own or manage land, for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings.
Mm.
There is nothing in the Constitution that gives the federal government any right to the ownership of any lands or to the management of those lands. So what's the federal government telling Siskiyou what to do for? They've got no legitimate power to do what they're doing, not just in Siskiyou, but all around the country. Now, the second major constitutional breach that Congress has undertaken, which affects the whole country, not so directly in Siskiyou, but it is this. It's the delegation of trade policy to international institutions. Now, a country cannot be sovereign if it cannot decide the terms of its own trade. If you cannot decide the terms of what it is you buy and sell, if somebody does that for you, you're not a free person. America is not operating as an independent country as long as it's turned its trade policy over to the World Trade Organization, the sister of the United Nations. And so this is why our jobs have gone offshore. This is why multinational corporations, a centerpiece to the Agenda 21 program, by the way, are able to do so well, because they produce it offshore at very reduced costs, bring it back here, sell it here, make huge profits, and pay no duty and excise tax, because that's all controlled by the World Trade Organization and not by the U.S. Congress. Our Congress a long time ago gave up our sovereignty by becoming a dutiful member of the World Trade Organization, where our economic policies are dictated by the globalist movement. And as a consequence, we have high unemployment, We have high underemployment. We have low productivity and a dismal future. We need to get out of the World Trade Organization. We need to recapture our lands and get the federal government out of our land ownership and land management. Those are the first two steps that have to be taken if we're to get out from underneath this this misery.
You talk about the relationship or the Department of Interior and their relationship with CAL FIRE. Now, there are a lot of folks employed by CAL FIRE in this area and in Siskiyou County. Do you think that... What do you think about that? I mean, we're talking about everyday people. And I just am not sure when I think about all the people that I know in CAL FIRE, if they're jumping into this too, if they're buying into all this too, because what does it mean for them?
Well, and if I could interject real quickly, I had a conversation, maybe a year ago with... It might have been a Fish and Game employee. It was at one of the public meetings that I went to. And there was a young man, probably in his mid-30s, who was involved in that public meeting. And I was talking to him about owning property. Well, he owns property in Siskiyou County, probably about 100 acres. And it's been passed down through three generations of his family. And I said, well, why are you not working your land and earning your living that way? Why are you working for Fish and Game? And he said, because I can't earn a living on it anymore. I have no choice. There's nothing I can do with my land. So he's kind of on both sides.
Right.
I would venture to say that some of those individuals, they have to eat. And so there's that. If I can't beat them, I'll join them.
I guess what I'm thinking is that people are going along blindly, really not knowing what their goal is or what the objective is for the department heads at CAL FIRE. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Well, I think so. Some of the people, it was... Warsaw was basically controlled, in 1939 by a few German soldiers. Just a few German soldiers were able to, corral the Jewish population there. But what happened was that there were a few fellas of the persecuted group who actually picked up the guns with the SS and routed their own people onto the trains. So there are always some people in this group who are willing to take a seat at the table in exchange for whatever. Now, people who are maybe at the table but don't know what table they're at, like your friend at CAL FIRE, they simply need to know and accept the reality of what's happening. And sure, we all got to eat. But what those people need to do is put themselves in the position of two fellows at the Department of Interior who have blown a whistle on the Department of Interior's plan for Siskiyou.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Dr. Hauser.
So just because you're working for the bad guys doesn't mean you can't be a good guy. You got to look for your opportunity and take it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the interim, you work for these agencies that are doing some of this bad stuff. They don't make it real public about the nature of the path that they're on. But, you can study this independently yourself, come to an understanding, and then just know that your day will come when you're called upon to be a hero like Hauser and...
Yeah, exactly. Now, we've got a minute before we go to our break. Very quickly, what's the third item that is unconstitutional?
The third item is the delegation of monetary authority to a private group of corporations. We're talking about the Federal Reserve. We're talking about taking honest constitutional money, which was required to be gold and silver. And we've created a funny money situation, money made out of thin air by centralized globalist bankers who then loan it out so that everything comes in the form of debt. This is a funny money system that's been used in history before. It always implodes. This time we've been into this current system of fiat money for well over 200 years. It began with the Bank of England and, you know, the assignment of that contract to a German family. And since then, every country in the world has taken on a central bank that relies on fiat, that is money created out of thin air and loaned out to the rest of us. So we have a total global system of fiat money coordinated by the Bank of International Settlements. And it is this system that allows them to buy up the politicians and to buy up the industries, the media, etc. And over a long enough period of time, we've had that system in this country for 100 years now, you end up finding that everything is consolidated and coordinated. That's where we are today. And that sets a very bad playing field for the ordinary citizen in America.
So we're all in a stack of dominoes. What's the one domino that you think will fall first?
Well, I think the big fall comes with the next round of the downing of the dollar. I mean, I think all of these international currencies are designed to fail. I think they're all being manipulated to fail. Fiat money either fails because it's the natural course of things. You can't have something as irrational as money made out of thin air last indefinitely. Pretty soon people figure out it's just a piece of paper. You know, so it fails of its own virtue, but even worse, those in control can cause its failure whenever they choose to cause it to fail. And that's the risk we're at today. As people begin to figure out the globalist assault on humanity and begin to pull away from it, they've got the ace card, because at that point they simply crash our currency.
Okay, that's a great place to stop. And when we come back, let's just go wherever you want to go, Michael. You are listening to We the People Radio. We're with Michael Shaw, a Freedom Advocate. Grab a cup of coffee. We're going to thank our advertisers. Enjoy it while you can, folks. We the People Radio. We're with Michael Shaw of freedomadvocates.org. So if I stumble over my words, it's because my head is, like, so full of allergies this morning. So
if I
sound like my tongue is swollen.
Into the city, you won't have those, right? Because it's all the,
there's
all the clean air that's causing
nothing,
that.
Nothing blooming?
Maybe. So we have a question in our chat room. And the question to you is, do you see Obama... Let's see, what was it? It was, do you see Obama being better than Romney? Or what's the pick? If Obama is better for another 4 years than Romney?
Well, I wouldn't make that pick. The big danger with Obama is that he'd be a second-term president. And to the extent that the Emergency War Powers Act gives the president dictatorial powers, unrelinquished since 1917. That dictatorial power has a restraint on it during a president's first term. But once it becomes a second term president, those restraints are gone because he's set for life and, short of an impeachment, he's set for the next 4 years. So I think today, whoever is picked by the Democrat Party or the Republican Party, we never want to have a second-term president until we clean up this mess. But I'm not somebody who will support the lesser of two evils. And so I say that when the election comes, what counts is who you elect to school boards.
Mm-hmm. To the local level. Back to the local level.
Out of your county and start with getting them out of your school system.
Because the truth is, we have so little power over national elections. I mean, Ruth and I were talking about the fact that with these Republican primaries, by the time they get to California, the decision's already been made. And we've got the largest population, but really we have no power over the vote.
Well, I'm going to say it doesn't matter. The Republican Party is a member of what's called the IDU. It's the International Democrat Union, IDU.org. It's led by the Conservative Party of Great Britain, the Labour Party of Australia, and the GOP. The GOP representatives are George Bush Sr. and Haley Barbour, former party chairman and now governor of Mississippi. What the IDU does, it's a consortium of 80 political parties from around the world. They call themselves Right of Center. And their purpose, the purpose for this international consolidation of conservative political parties is to obtain the universal adoption of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Now, that's the UN document that would replace the U.S. Declaration of Independence. And under the UN Declaration of Human Rights, it says in Article 29 that the powers and freedoms given to the people, you know, in the prior 28 chapters, are subject to the principles and purposes as defined from time to time by the UN. So that means that all of your rights come from this hierarchy of man. None of your rights are natural. None of your rights are unalienable. All of your rights can be taken away. And this is the core document that the GOP leadership supports. So there's no way the GOP is going to nominate a person like you or me.
No, no. Hey, and we've got a caller on our line now that had a question for you. Comrade Ann, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I have a question for your guest. I want to know if he thinks that four more years of Obama would be preferable to four more years of someone new, such as Mitt Romney.
Oh, I think, yeah, I think we just answered that.
Okay, I'm locked in the office here and so that the radio doesn't interfere, so I couldn't. I didn't.
Oh, okay, yeah. And did you want to just touch on that again real quickly, Michael?
I think I just want to add a follow-up question. Are you going to vote in the election, even though you talk about the lesser of two evils? Are you going to vote for... No.
I might vote for somebody who won't win, but I will not vote for the Republican or the Democrat nominee.
So you'll vote your conscience.
I'll vote my reason.
Yeah, your reason. Okay, good.
Yeah,
I'm voting my conscience, too. And it certainly won't be for someone who I don't think has absolutely no chance to win. And
about the lesser of two evils. And what if you say that Obama could catapult this Agenda 21 even further, why would you want to have him be elected as president?
Split the vote?
Exactly, because it could. I mean, it obviously could.
Well, second term, let's look at the president since George Bush Sr. and their commitment to Agenda 21. We've had two Democrats and two Republicans, and the thing that is absolutely clear is that each man who's assumed the White House takes us deeper and deeper into Agenda 21. Mm-hmm. That will happen no matter who is president in 1913 or in 1917. We are on a course that is unalterable until we recapture our school boards, until we recapture our city councils and our water boards, and until we capture our board of supervisors. When we've done that, we'd be the first county in America to recapture American principles. Once that happens somewhere, we want to spread that to surrounding counties. And then finally, get a state house that we can recapture. We cannot start at the state house. We have to start with the school board.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not until we've captured enough state houses that we'll have any chance of taking back the federal government.
There
is no member of Congress, no member of Congress who will deal with these issues.
And
because you lose your support from the parties.
There you go. And I just wanted to say that we've been promoting that all along, that you have to get involved at the local level. And you know, I'm very proud to say that in our neck of the woods in Northern California, not just in Shasta County, but all the surrounding counties, our citizens, including our sheriffs, and most importantly our sheriffs, we have been fighting back in a very big way. And maybe that's because we live in a rural area and we really do see what we stand to lose. But one of the things that, you know, I kind of am bothered
bothered by your position only because Obama has actually reached out to make this global agenda more palatable. And I, frankly, I can't even fathom the thought of him for another 4 years. And so it just makes sense to me that maybe you don't like Romney, maybe you don't like Paul, but the bottom line is that he's got to be better than what we've got now.
No, no,
we have to break his momentum.
If you Google Mitt Romney plus sustainable development, you'll find that Mitt Romney is Barack Obama on steroids. What he will do is approach it from a little different position. It's kind of like when we went from Gray Davis as governor to Arnold Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger was the greatest proponent of Agenda 21 of any governor in the history of America. Now, he was Republican, but boy, he sure sounded a lot better than Gray Davis. What Gray Davis was doing was going after wildlands projects, and what Schwarzenegger did is went for the implementation of smart growth policy. So you do not win by shifting these horses. If you Google Romney plus sustainability, you'll find this guy is on public-private partnership heaven.
Okay, can I jump in here for just a minute? That being said, you laid out an excellent case as to why you should vote for Romney, even if you don't trust him. You don't want to give Obama a second term because he's going to be the dictator on steroids.
Exactly.
Well, I guarantee you that every 4 years, the process is accelerated. It doesn't matter who's president.
Well, let's just, I guess, let's take it out of the political arena and just make it just a common sense sort of thing. Why would you want to just relinquish that one vote?
But I also think that, you know, we're getting a little off track on this conversation a little bit because I think the point has been made that our entire federal administration is behind Agenda 21. What we need to get back to talking about is how we can change it at the local level. And we have to just give each other, as private citizens who still have the right to vote any way they choose. So our conversation today, I think we need to focus on what we can do as individuals. And before we come up on our next break, which is about a minute away, let's talk more about the local level, Michael. You know, your points are great on what we can do locally because citizens will fight back if they feel that there's actually something they can do.
Okay. Well, Dr. Paul Hauser is a fellow who is a professor at George Mason University, and he's also the science advisor and scientific integrity officer for the Bureau of Reclamation. And he was involved in the study for the dam busting in Siskiyou. And he apparently has a minority view within the programmed and pre-planned Department of Interior. And so this is what Dr. Hauser has done. On February 24th, Hauser emailed Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors of its concerns about how government is conducting its decision-making process. He writes this on February 24th to your Board of Supervisors. He says, I know you are concerned about the Klamath secretarial determination process. That's dealing with Secretary Salazar's determination to tear the dams down. So I wanted to bring to your attention an allegation of scientific and scholarly misconduct and reprisal for a whistleblower disclosure I made concerning the biased summarization of key scientific conclusions for the Klamath River Dam removal process. So, there's a big brouhaha at the Department of Interior because one PhD, a young man, and most of these guys are just, you know, cookie cutters of one another.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to the Department of Interior and he finds that taking down these dams will have deleterious effects on the environment. And he makes his points, and his points are completely ignored. And he goes through a process. He has a report that one can find at Defend Rural America. But he has a 11-page report that was mailed to the Office of Executive Secretariat and Regulatory Affairs within the Department of Interior, whereby he establishes his whistleblower status And he goes into great detail about the intentional falsification of dealing with reporting of scientific results for the Siskiyou dam bust. So he's made a huge cry within the Department of Interior. He first was not compliant with their conclusions. He brought this up. He was immediately put on probation, and shortly thereafter was simply fired. He makes a very compelling argument that the determination, we always say in discussing Agenda 21, that they are, you know, you get these consensus meetings that go on in your town where the outcome is predetermined. And essentially, he has said that the Department of Interior's outcome, the scientific outcome for the question of dam removal, was predetermined in accordance with political policy and not scientific policy. And his evidences of this intentional falsification laid out in this letter and in a whole series of exhibits that he's attached is overwhelming.
And, you know, I wanted to point out that Dr. Hauser was on our show, I want to say, 3 or 4 weeks ago. So I encourage people to go to WeThePeopleRadio.us, go through the archives, find that show. He was on for about an hour, and you can hear it for yourself. And it was a great hour as he laid out why he did what he did and what he found. And so, Michael, what do you think the ramifications of his revelation will do for the dam removal? I know that it's at least impeded the progress a little bit, but will it stop it entirely?
Well, I don't think we can say that. I mean, the one thing we know about the globalist movement is that most often they simply will do what they're going to do. But sometimes they make U-turns. And when they make U-turns, it's always back into the bushes to figure out their next course of attack.
Yeah.
And the next course of attack will be with four times as much power as their last attack. So either way, Hauser's revelations may have bought some time.
And that's why we need to ramp it up on the end of the citizens, too.
Right. And when we come back, I want to ask you a question. I know you've been doing this a long time, and I want to find out what your support is and who have you been able to kind of bring together and help fight this agenda.
You're listening to We the People Radio. We'll be right back.
Talking to Michael Shaw of freedomandadvocates.org. We're talking all things Agenda 21. And when we were off air, we were chatting a little bit about this fight to slow down, if not stop, the implementation of Agenda 21. And we were talking about all of the different coalitions coming together and who you're working with, Michael. And I thought that was a great segue into just promoting the Eagle Forum of California and the conference that's coming up later in April. And there you will find all of your partners in this fight against Agenda 21. And this is a great opportunity for people in California to jump on board and meet the experts, have the conversations, listen to the panel discussions. And I wanted to promote it real quickly. If you go to Eagle Forum of California, I believe it's .com, it may be .org, but just Google Eagle Forum of California. It's the 11th annual state conference. It will be held in Sacramento on April 20th and 21st. And, you know, some of the people that will be joining Michael Shaw will be Assemblyman Tim Donnelly, Dr. Michael Kaufman. We have Warren Duffy. We have Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson. We've got several Tea Party leaders who have been fighting this battle. Barbara Decker, Kevin Eggers, he's an op-ed writer for the Napa Register, some of the sheriffs from some of the local counties. This is going to be an awesome event.
And we have a question from one of the chat packers, Dave, who wants to know, is there any group in the California desert that are fighting Agenda 21, and how do they contact them?
Boy, groups in the desert actually fighting. I am not aware of groups there that are fighting. Awareness generally is really begun to rise, and that's a good thing. You can't keep up with all the groups that are working to kick the ICLEI organization out of their city government, and you know, the groups that are beginning to really come to grips with what Agenda 21 is. And clearly the desert is under massive pressure. I mean, the pressure is big in Siskiyou, but the control of these deserts is key in the minds of people like Dianne Feinstein. And so all kinds of legislation has been imposed upon desert lands over the last decade or two. They're all in the thrust of advancing Agenda 21. And of course, part of Agenda 21 is to get all the people out of hot areas so that so they can turn the air conditioning off here, there, and everywhere. So they face a special set of problems in the desert. The thing that is constant is that the pressure to move everyone out of rural wildland areas and into smart growth bastions is dominant. Dominant in California, throughout the West, and in fact all across the country.
And Michael, because Agenda 21 will affect every aspect of our lives, from our transportation to our energy use to our water use, the food we eat, where we live, the size of where we live, everything, can you explain what ICLEI, where ICLEI comes in, and explain the acronym for those that are listening that are not familiar with that?
All right. ICLEI is the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. It is an NGO. It's one of the prime NGOs around the world. It drafted the local Agenda 21 planning guide that works right along with the Earth Summit Agenda 21 document itself. They have contracts, if you can imagine, with over 600 cities in the United States to bring climate action programs and Agenda 21 programs to the particular cities involved. They are involved in the regional governing apparatus, the COGs and MPOs that exist throughout the United States and that bring federal money for the implementation of Agenda 21. A city's commitment with ICLEI breaches Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, which prohibits states and its subdivisions from engaging with any foreign political operative. And clearly that's what ICLEI is. So we've got treasonous activities being undertaken by local elected officials, all for the purposes of creating world order. And I say, for those cities that are ICLEI members, and 178 cities in California are ICLEI members, it is the leading bastion of ICLEI cities in the world, and particularly here in Central California. Actions need to be taken and are being taken. Over 50 cities have kicked ICLEI out, which is a good first step. A lot more needs to happen. But the awareness of ICLEI has begun to grow, and that's something we're very pleased about. The attack on ICLEI was something that I've been focused on for a few years anyway, and it's good to see that serve as a rising point for...
Who are some of those cities that
kicked
them
out?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Amador County kicked them out. That was an early county.
Yeah, Amador County has sort of been the poster child for fighting back right from the get-go.
They've done a good job. There's I think it's a Gold Country Tea Party there. It's done a good job. Other cities that have kicked it out cities. Oh boy, let's see.
There's quite a few, and I think that you can go to that website or. I know there's a source for finding out which cities have kicked it out, and I want to tie that into the Climate Action Plan, which is implemented at every local level, and that may be where you can find that information.
The problem is, you kick ICLEI out, it's not really kicked out, because ICLEI is also driving the COGS, the Council of Governments, that are the federalized regional system of government that we don't learn about in school, and that for which your cities and counties can do nothing without the COG approval. And COG is being directed by ICLEI, so even if you kick ICLEI out of your city, you got ICLEI coming back in the COG's directions to your city as guided by the ICLEI organization. So we have been infiltrated. Infiltration runs very deep. You know, a good first step is getting rid of your city contract with ICLEI, and failing that, to notice your elected officials of what's called a misprision of treason. That is, they face a lifelong exposure for having allowed ICLEI to engage with your city in violation of constitutional provisions, and just having allowed it to occur once you bring it to their attention makes them theoretically, without a statute of limitations, theoretically responsible for this massive treasonous action. And if I'm an elected city official and I get wind of this, I tell you, I'm kicking ICLEI out in about 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Because
absolutely.
I'm not going to face 10 years from now a treason charge for not having done exactly that.
Right. And, you know, I've never been able to stress enough that it just all comes back to the local level. You know, you've got to know what's going on in your own very community, because that's how they implement this thing. They can't do it on a grand scale. They've got to bring it into each individual community. And I've seen the general plan for our own city here, and there is that potential down the road that people will be required to pull their lawns out and the rose bushes and only be able to plant things that fall under a city ordinance as acceptable. I mean, it's that personal to everyone. There's no one that's not going to be affected by this. And you know, I'm not on a soapbox for tea parties necessarily, but obviously I'm involved in one, but these are the people that have been fighting back and making this big impact, especially in the Bay Area.
Well, you can't always trust the Tea Parties. A lot of Tea Parties are GOP-led, and those Tea Parties will not discuss Agenda 21. So you know if you're in a good Tea Party if it talks about Agenda 21 and it's not led by Dick Armey.
Well, I'm here to say that ours is not.
Okay. Well, that's obvious. That's obvious.
Yeah. Northern California is pretty dynamic. So they are out there.
Yeah.
But that's what
Let
you
me
can...
talk.
Sure. Go ahead.
Quickly about another communication that has come in from a scientific leader. This man is from Southern California. He's originally from India, and he is very accomplished and very connected to the United Nations. Even this shows that you know, good people can be misdirected, but they remain good people. Anyway, this man's name is Thomas Helper, and he declares in a letter written to the Bureau of Reclamation and copied to your county supervisors that, quote, the proposed action to remove the Iron Gate and J.C. Boyle earth dams is not safe or doable. These dams have clay in the middle, saturated in water for decades. Any attempt to breach a dam with its clay in such condition will be dangerous. The dam will collapse catastrophically. I will justify my assertion, he goes on to write, and provide scientific proof, and also explain a few technical terms to assist non-technical people. Well, this man had been the director of the Central Water Commission for the Ministry of Water Resources for the government of India. He's a scholar who has worked at the United Nations Development Program in Australia. He has graduate studies from India, from Queensland in Australia, from the University of Southern California, and more. This man is highly experienced in his whole career in regard to the construction and nature of earth dams. And he has made several lengthy communications to the Department of Interior about the danger that would result from breaching these two earthen dams up in Siskiyou County. So what we've got between these two scientifically capable people are whistleblowers, in one case in the real sense, and the other in a generic way, you know, but people who are letting the information, the real science, out, and who are nixing Secretary Salazar's predetermined conclusion to break these dams. Now, Salazar was supposed to, as of yesterday, announce the command to break the dams. Now, when these two scientists came out with this position, Salazar has backed away and has turned the decision now over to Congress. So you say, well, what's going to happen to Siskiyou? And I say, well, I don't know what's going to happen to Siskiyou, but you know, you've now created, you know, some whiplash for the Obama administration and for Secretary Salazar and for whoever the next Interior Department Secretary is, because if it's Romney elected, I guarantee you the Siskiyou Dam problem will not go away unless it goes away for an interim because of these kinds of evidence disclosures by trained scientists who know what the consequences of these dam busts will be.
We're going to take one more quick break. We'll be back for the very end of We the People Radio with Michael Shaw.
Yeah, that's right. We're not giving up. It's not over till it's over.
Not over till it's over. So, Michael, we've been a little inconsistent with our breaks today because it's been really hard to pull away from everything you've been sharing. But we do just have about 2 minutes left. So what do you want to close with? And give us some information where we can find out more.
Well, let me give the punchline that I had intended to get to earlier, but time flies. The punchline is this. I think that Siskiyou County needs to take control of these dams. Warren Buffett is willing to pay, $500 million to demolish these dams. You can give Warren Buffett a good deal. You say, Warren, keep your money, give us title. Condemn the dams, put them in county ownership. Then when the federal government comes to you and says, hey, you got to spend money that you don't have to make these dams fish accessible. You say, hey, federal government, take a hike.
Mm-hmm. That's where your great sheriff comes in.
Take a hike. That's where the sheriff comes in. And, you say, well, what does that mean, take a hike? Does it mean secede from the United States? And I say, well, that depends on what the federal government does when you tell them to take a hike.
Yeah. Make sure you've
got plans. Does that mean you have to withdraw from the state of California because of fish and game? I don't know. Those questions have to be asked. But if somewhere across this country doesn't simply say, no, we're not doing it, then get yourself ready for the second,
hey,
32nd floor in San Francisco.
Thank you again so much. I know we'll have you back on again. It's Michael Shaw from...